This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
To stretch just a little bit with Donald Trump has already said, if the president shot John Bolton in the middle of Fifth Avenue, it seems he wouldn't lose any voters. Not among the Republican senators voting in his impeachment trial anyway. And by the time you're hearing this, it may be over. All but the shouting. And just as the president's lawyers have said already, it's finally going to be up to the voters to decide the fate of Donald Trump and the fate of the Republicans who have supported him all the way.
Hey guys, let him through.
What do you make of John Bolton's motivations at this point? Do you think he's trustworthy?
Just half-assed in the House. I've seen the New York Times story. I have no idea what they're talking about.
I think there's no need for witnesses. I think the case, as I said, is so strong. Hopefully it's over this week, and we can get focused on doing the business of the American people.
So far as I know, there has been no witness deal.
Senator, are you in conversations about a bipartisan deal?
Democrats have spent a lot of time imagining what the president's motives are. Someone ought to spend some time imagining what John Bolton's motives are other than making millions of dollars to trash the president.
I will vote for a motion that allows for all relevant witnesses, and I think both sides are entitled to relevant witnesses. I do not see how Biden is relevant to these allegations, but I believe the standard is they have to be relevant.
We heard Senators Lindsey Graham, Jim Jordan, Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Rand Paul, and Kirsten Gillibrand. All of our coverage on impeachment is at NewYorker.com, much of it from Susan Glasser, who reports from the Capitol.
I see Carl Hulse there, the very distinguished New York Times correspondent.
I actually heard something funny today from staff. They're kind of enjoying this because their members are locked in the Senate without their phones for like all day, and they know where they are and don't have to talk to them.
We are on our way to hook up with Senator Chris Coons of Delaware. We're going to walk over from his Senate office to the Capitol for yet another day of proceedings in the Senate trial. It's Wednesday, right in the middle of the Senate trial of President Trump.
Hey, how are you?
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks so much. Hi there.
Sorry,
I hear the
I was just
protests,
reflecting on the fact
yeah.
that if we walk from here
right.
over to there, we're going to walk right through the
right,
middle of protests.
Right. When we walked over here before, I don't know if there's a huge number of people who come out, but when there weren't like a ton of people, so. Which is one of the notable things really about this impeachment trial. I've been really struck by the fact that there aren't, you know, people in the streets. So.
We had extra people
yeah.
lined up to answer
yeah.
the front desk calls
because,
yeah. you know, during Kavanaugh, during the strike on Soleimani, during other moments in the last year or two, we've gotten just floods of phone calls.
Yeah.
We haven't. We've gotten hundreds, but
mm-hmm.
not thousands.
The fact that they feel that they know the outcome is really the thing. Not that there aren't strong passions on both sides, but I know
like
what's going to happen.
It's like watching a game that you've recorded and intend to watch, but then someone blurts out who won and what the score was, and you decide not to go back and just watch the
yeah.
replay.
What I wonder is about, you know, we're about to have the Iowa caucuses in New Hampshire. We're in an election year. You know, President Trump has essentially always appealed to people on the idea that this is a rigged process and a rigged system. In the Democratic Party, arguably, Bernie Sanders says something of the same. The system is rigged against you. This is literally kind of like a rigged trial. I don't know how that resounds politically, but I've been thinking a lot about that.
Well, if what ends up happening after 2 days of questioning is that every one of my Republican colleagues votes for no more witnesses, no more documents, it'll be hard to reach any other conclusion than they just didn't want to know, because John Bolton is available, is offering to testify, is, if press accounts are to be believed, the author of a finished manuscript that is directly relevant to the issues in front of the Senate. It's pretty hard to explain why you wouldn't want to hear from John Bolton.
So, okay, you're sitting there every day. I'm stuck up in the gallery, so I'm staring at you. You haven't been
I'll
a milk
drinker. I'll wave next time I see you.
You're not a milk drinker, apparently. Mitt Romney's a chocolate milk drinker. You're sitting there next to Amy Klobuchar,
yes.
Who, of course, is one of several Democratic senators running for president and who are stuck here in Washington instead of in Iowa. You're a big Biden backer coming from
yes.
Delaware. You guys are passing notes. What are you talking about?
So, Amy, Senator Klobuchar also sits next to me on the Judiciary Committee. Partly they're just lighthearted notes, observations about particular members of the president's team or the House managers and how they're doing or what's going on. And sometimes I'm just encouraging her because I know it's difficult to be literally days away from the most important political moment of her life, which is the Iowa caucuses,
yeah.
and to be here rather than there.
Yeah, no, it's really every time. We're now arriving at the Capitol,
yep,
so we'll have a brief
in the main
security interlude, at least for us.
You guys
have
got to go through that.
So now we're inside the Capitol with Senator Coons, and he and Senator Cantwell has just come in for the day, too. You have party lunches before...
Yes, we have a caucus lunch that's beginning right now.
Okay. And how useful are those for, touching base with people? And, are you talking about
Absolutely.
The trial?
We're talking about the trial. We're sort of comparing notes on conversations we're having with colleagues. Today, in particular, we're having conversations about what are the questions that we're going to be asking, in what order, who's taking the lead on which issues.
Right. So what is your question that you most want answered?
Well, I've got 10 that I'd most like
They're to
They're
not going
to
let you ask 10.
Here's the question. The president's brief states, Congress has forbidden foreigners' involvement in American elections.
No, the other.
Despite that, in June 2019, President Trump said, if Russia or China offered information on his opponent, quote, there's nothing wrong with listening. And he said he might not even alert the FBI. Does President Trump agree with your statement, and again, this is a question to his lawyers, that foreigners' involvement in American elections is illegal?
Good question.
Let me put it this way. If the answer is no, we have a big problem. If there are Republicans who refuse to accept this foundational legal principle, heaven help us, and I'm assuming that those who end up voting against removal because of these impeachment articles will still agree that what the president did was wrong.
Well, that's the interesting thing. I would say that the Alan Dershowitz argument on Monday night for the Republican senators was key, because he essentially gave them the free pass to make
the
argument that you and I anticipated all along.
It was designed to give them a hook to hang their hat on
yeah.
that says, yes, what the president did was wrong, but you can't impeach him for that. I would say this. If a Republican makes the argument, removing the president this soon, this close to an election, isn't the right response. We should trust the American electorate.
Yeah.
Let them make the decision.
That's another strong argument.
Then you have to support more witnesses and more documents, because otherwise you're saying, I trust the electorate, but I'm willing to participate in a cover-up that prevents them from knowing what they should know to reach a conclusion about this.
So, Senator Coons, you've been very generous with your time today. I can smell the lunch wafting out, although it doesn't smell that good. Is the food been okay?
I'll tell you, the food here is usually really good, but not always.
Well, thank you again, Senator Coons, for your time.
Thanks, Susan. Great to be on with you.
Thank you. Okay, so we've just finished having a conversation with Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, and now we're going to walk through the Capitol to the Capitol crypt and the hideaway office of Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, who's one of the 7 House managers. I I'm here with Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from California, who has the very interesting distinction of being not only one of the seven House managers prosecuting, in effect, the case against President Trump, but she is the only member who has been on her third impeachment. So we can talk a little bit about that. Congresswoman, Nixon, Clinton, Trump. As Nancy Pelosi said, no matter what happens in the Senate, Donald Trump is always going to be impeached. That list is always going to include him.
That's right.
What's the shorthand you have in your head so far about the difference between Nixon, Clinton, and Trump?
Well, there are some surprising similarities between Nixon and Trump. Nixon tried to cheat in an election and he covered it up. Trump tried to cheat in an election and covered it up. The differences are, honestly, Nixon was more forthcoming with the Congress. He told publicly all his staff to come to the Congress to answer relevant questions honestly, without requiring a subpoena or anything of that nature. Trump told every member of the executive branch not to testify, no documents, nothing. Most people don't realize that Nixon was less of a cover-up artist than President Trump.
Amazing. So we are speaking on Wednesday morning, before the trial goes into session. And, of course, the big question is whether there's really anything other than a completely orchestrated kind of march to the inevitable outcome that we're witnessing. So what is your view of that?
Well, I'm an optimist. I don't think I could have this job if I weren't an optimist.
You have to be one.
And we have presented a very compelling case based on evidence and fact witnesses. In the trial, senators have a chance to call additional witnesses, and there has never been a trial in the Senate on impeachment, and it's not just presidential treatment, it's judicial as well, where there haven't been witnesses and documents. So if the Senate declines to have documents and witnesses, that would be a radical departure from history and from precedent. It would also defeat the purposes I think they have, which is to find the truth. Ultimately, that's what a trial is about, to find the truth.
Well, of course, Congresswoman, right in the middle of the trial over a weekend on a Sunday late in the afternoon is when the news about John Bolton dropped in the New York Times. Where were you when you heard about it, and what did you think?
I was sitting with the other managers in a room in the Capitol going through the next day's proceedings and preparing, and one of the staff got a flash on their phone, and the first words out of my mouth were, yikes.
So you had no advance notice, no warning?
No, I had no idea. Now, we had heard, we'd read in the paper that there was some book, but what it said, we had no idea. I just thought, wow, I mean, that is a game changer. That's like when Nixon admitted everything Monday morning, and he had to announce his resignation the next day. Wow.
But it wasn't. It's more like Access Hollywood, isn't it?
You know, that was about sex. Just like the Clinton impeachment was about sex. I don't approve of what Clinton did, and I certainly don't approve of the language and the behavior that President Trump engaged in. But that's not a high crime and misdemeanor. That's for voters to decide. And they decided that they didn't care about that misbehavior of President Trump. This is a very different issue.
But this is about
misusing his power to subvert the Constitution of the United States to the detriment of the interests of the American people. That is a very severe charge.
I think that's what's so extraordinary for me, just as an observer, to watch what happens from that yikes, wow moment on Sunday evening. Over the last few days, you and I have both been in the Capitol, and we've heard a process once again of many of your Republican colleagues in the Senate essentially going from, wow, I'm not sure, to, well, we don't really need to hear from that anyways.
Some of the senators have said that. Let's be clear. Most of the senators haven't said anything. So we don't know what they're thinking. And I'd like to believe this, that they are evaluating what is the right thing for the country. That's what I'd like to believe they're doing.
For you, during the House manager's presentation last week, I was struck by the fact that you seemed to take a much more kind of evidence-based and legal approach to the presentation, and some of them were much more partisan and rhetorical. Was that by design on your part?
This is a trial. And so if they are laying out evidence that's incorrect or a theory of the law that doesn't hold up, then I think it's helpful, I hope, to the senators to point that out in a very logical way that gives citations to actual facts and law that they can use it as they reach a conclusion. And that's a job I was assigned to do, and I'm trying to do it best I can.
So, okay, on the arguments, what do you think is the strongest and weakest part of your case constitutionally?
I think there's clear evidence that the president committed a high crime and misdemeanor. He subverted the constitutional order for his personal benefit to the detriment of the interests of the country. I think there's no evidence of the contrary.
Are there any arguments that you heard from the Trump team so far that you thought were particularly strong or that you were surprised by?
You know, it's just dust in the air. I was really disappointed
dust in the air.
That it was not, it was, I thought, very weak.
Isn't the lesson here for American politics that stonewalling works?
If the Senate allows it, it will forever change the relationship between the branches of government. What it would say to a president, Democrat or Republican, you can just tell the Congress to pound sand. If this misbehavior is basically just ignored, I think what it means is there would not be a capacity for the Congress to utilize the remedy that the founders put in the Constitution to hold an executive to account, because there will never be a piece of information or a witness ever sent to Congress for an impeachment and probably for oversight either, for anything the president doesn't want.
Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Susan Glasser is The New Yorker's Washington correspondent, and you can read her on impeachment and much more at NewYorker.com. Zoe Lofgren represents the 19th Congressional District of California.